Welcome to the event, Justice for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. This is a virtual gathering hosted by IU's Asian Cultural Center in cooperation with the City of Bloomington and the Office of the Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs. We gather today to commemorate the lives of the victims of anti-Asian violence in Atlanta and to urge the Hoosier community to stand for justice. My name is Pallavi Rao, and I am a PhD candidate here in the Media School at IU. I've also been a part of the ACC, or Asian Cultural Center, community for the past 5 years. I am moderating this event. We hope that the poets and the speakers who will join us today will offer us all some measure of healing, comfort, and strength as we honor the lives of those who were lost by violence. To start this event tonight, I would like to read out the names of the 8 victims of the mass shooting in Atlanta. Soon Chung Park, Hyun Jung Grant, Sun Cha Kim, Yong A Yil, Zhao Jie Tan, Dao Yu Feng, Delena Ashley Young, Paul Andre Michels. As you might already know, 6 of the victims were Asian American women. We will begin this evening with a poetry reading by Hiromi Yoshida. Hiromi teaches American literature for the award-winning VITAL, or V-I-T-A-L, program at the Monroe County Public Library.
Thank you very much. I will read 2 poems tonight. The first is an untitled haiku, and the second is a longer piece. Atlanta shootings. Sad Women's History Month. Say her Asian name. Here is my second piece. It's called COVID America. It began with the Chinese virus. Injected invective into mainstream media flows. No filter. Till the United States of America became a filthy petri dish, breeding, incubating, resurrected hashtags and multiple truncations, shutdowns, lockdowns, one-handed masturbation sessions, Walmart shopping sprees for toilet paper and hand sanitizer as though 6 feet apart isn't long enough distance between Democrats and Republicans. The length of an average-sized coffin in America. And now, masked faces are politically correct emojis, and school children and teachers are collateral damage, waiting to be counted and collected, slipping through the cracks of the 2020 census. While Karen became the princess ensconced in ice at the glassy apex of Capitol Hill, and George Floyd became the summer hashtag excuse, erupting from claustrophobic suburban closets. If the coronavirus is a left-wing government hoax, then the KKK is a masquerade of sadomasochistic blacks smirking in white hoods. Halt tic-tac negotiations because no Americans got a Chinaman's chance. Swallow bleach to sanitize mansions of the mind inundated with misinformation. Pimp Polaroids for Facebook likes and Twitter followers. Keep digging in the gold mines of overflowing dumpsters with rubber gloves. Pick out soggy Cheerios with OCD childhood spoons because all lives matter in heaven and hell. A COVID test is like a Shirley Jackson lottery, but the black dot is the cue ball shot across vast green fields where stripes and solids and life and death are equal opportunities for all. America, the big-boobed nation, is not particularly interested in flattening out curves because bigger is better, and biggest is best. So let's go ahead and say that COVID-19 is symptomatic of the American diseases of racism and all other isms and orgasmic schisms. Corporate greed, homelessness, obesity, sugar, salt, butter, cheese, red meat, fast food, barbecue sauce, overkill, Mrs. Butterworth, Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima, the menage a trois falling off their respective supermarket shelves like shot down Confederate statues. And BLM is the graffiti scrawl of underground discourses, like the N-word, the F-word, the word branded upon the obscene, obese flesh of the denying white American brain. The word with which the world began and could end. So cover up the big American motor mouth. Speak no evil. Spitting out epithelial epithets, using leftover duct tape from 9/11 terror alert days. Bossy and Kevorkian morph into Siamese twins in paranoid collective consciousness. In a nation ruled by old white men. When will Uncle Sam wear a dress when he, she, they are dressed to kill? When will we cry uncle? When will mother know best? When will entropic atoms coalesce into utopia? Nobody in America wants to wear a mask that covers up full, luscious, smiling lips. CoverGirl, disenfranchised. Nobody wants to comply with government mandates in a democratic America. A gag bag of party tricks, a piñata exploding plastic Cracker Jack prizes in your face. America is an immigrant's wet dream, the green residue of pinched pennies. America is a melting pot of incompatible condiments, a conundrum of pundits, lamb stew of crab rangoons and national lampoons, Willy Wonka's chocolatier walk and Charlie Chan's chapstick factory. Enigmatic reduction of USPS operations generates nostalgia for the taste of glue on the sticky backsides of US postage stamps. America is a silly thing. America is a bleached blonde virago. America is a floating signifier. Hollywood's mega mouth, sound and fury. America is a masquerade of giggling, scrawny, pimpled, dimpled teenagers. America is a narcissist reflected in gilt-edged, gargantuan, baroque mirrors. Guilt tripping down strip malls, stripped of all shame, like the naked emperor. American dads curse at barbecue grills that won't start up. American moms upbraid their pigtailed daughters for smashing their overstuffed piggy banks prematurely. American kids vie for the biggest unbroken cookie. American dogs sniff the biggest crotches. And it all ends with the Chinese virus. Eating its own gray spermatozoic rat tail Ouroborically, gagging on the dust of desecrated Edens. shriveled mummy Chinatowns scattered across the pockmarked moon face of America. The Polaroid cheese that stands alone on one shriveled Zen leg. Thank you.
We will now hear a statement from the city of Bloomington, read by Beverly Callender Anderson. Beverly is the director of the city's Community and Family Resources Department.
I am here tonight representing the nearly 800 employees of the city of Bloomington, along with Mayor John Hamilton. Want to make you aware of bloomington.in.gov/building-bridges. If you are looking for events or resources or ways to report any kind of bias incidents or crimes.
Thank you very much. We will now hear from Dr. Denise Hayes, who is the director of IU's Counseling and Psychological Services.
CAPS is here to support you through this grief. Our staff is very diverse. We have staff from China, from Taiwan, from Pakistan, and from India. We have staff that speak Mandarin, Hindi, Telugu, and Spanish. We make it our business to be culturally competent. That doesn't mean that we know everything about every individual, but we certainly strive to understand not only what they're presenting, but the background, the context. Please reach out to us. We're here for you.
Thank you so much. I would now like to invite Abby Yang, who is a local activist, the founder of the No Space for Hate group, as well as the Monroe County Area Mutual Aid.
So I struggled a lot tonight to find the right words to say. And I think I'm just going to talk a little bit about the Monroe County Area Mutual Aid Group. So I helped start the Mutual Aid Group in March 2020 in response to the pandemic shutdowns and due to the need for solidarity and community that went beyond individuality and self-reliance, or just a mentality that people needed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And while it has been a rewarding experience for the most part, I think people in general, allies, need to be aware of the prevalence of anti-Asian racism due to rhetoric around COVID and the term China virus, and the ways in which Asian Americans who participate helping in mutual aid groups such as myself have been placed at risk or face additional pain due to this kind of rhetoric, which continues to circulate. So while helping many people in this mutual aid group, it's been a frequent experience to click through their Facebook profiles to talk to them and send them a message in response to questions that they may have, only to find anti-Asian rhetoric and conspiracy theories, not to mention even jokes and slurs about Asian Americans. One message in particular has been burned into my brain, that from a young woman who, frustrated at not receiving the kind of help that she wanted, quickly told me that myself and my people had caused COVID, and that all of this was my fault. And people continue to treat me very, very differently from the white people in the group. And it's not simply those experiences, it's maybe the pain of not being believed about them. In explaining many of these experiences to other people, I have often found that the reaction often is doubt, or that these concerns have been continually minimized, that, you know, it can't really be that bad. As allies, I believe that this points to the need to learn how to recognize anti-Asian hate, anti-Asian rhetoric in the backyard, the ways in which this can lead to violence, and the need to respond rather than just look away or to be silent. After all, anti-Asian violence is baked in the history of Bloomington right here, as we can recall from the murder of Won Jun Yoon. I have never regretted working on the mutual aid group, but I think it's important to acknowledge the ways in which this is a disproportionate burden on myself and people who look like me. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Abby. We will now have another poetry reading by Lisa Kwong. Lisa is a poet who identifies as Appalachian. She's also a lecturer in the Asian American Studies program here at IU.
Thank you, Pallavi. Thank you, everyone who organized this on short notice. Thank you, everyone who has shown so much support during this time. I felt in my heart that's been very heavy these last several days, that it was only right to try and write something new to honor the victims, to commemorate the victims. So this is an Asian American elegy for Atlanta. Dear community, we sit in sorrow today. We have been here before, and I fear we will see the snapping of our dreams again and again. Our immigrant mothers sacrifice everything for us. They will labor until it is almost time for their water to break, give birth, and then return immediately to work to help feed their families, sometimes taking their babies with them because they can't find childcare. We grieve for the families of Atlanta, especially the children, how their mothers won't live to see them achieve the hopes of our ancestors who believed in gold, who battered their backs to build the Transcontinental Railroad, who desired to be American citizens but were denied, who fought for a country that hated them, who gave America everything in the pursuit of justice, freedom, and democracy. Still today, we are the foreigners whose English is so good or does not have an accent, as if all Asians are cut from the same dumpling and can be molded into whatever America thinks we should be. To my Asian, Asian American, and Pacific Islander sisters, our bodies, minds, and spirits have been trampled on for far too long. As Margaret Cho said, stop killing us. We must shout to the world, we are not your China dolls, not your temptations, fetishes, or addictions, not your model minorities, not your Madam Butterflies, Miss Saigons, and certainly not your dragon ladies. We are wonder, revolution, and revelation. We deserve and command respect. As Sandra Oh said, I am proud to be Asian. We belong here. The killer stole 8 lives, mortally wounded a 9th. We will not let him steal one more of our spirits, shattering them beyond recognition. We will stand with each other and we will rise like impenetrable mountains where bullets and lies can't touch us. We too will someday be ancestors, but not yet and not by the bloody hands of white supremacy. It is an honor to mentor and a deep responsibility to console the younger generations. And it is our legacy, much like our immigrant parents' hopes, that they won't have to work so hard to be seen as human. We are survivors. We are warriors. Though we are full of sorrow, we will continue to fight for a better world for all who are not fully free. In a world trying to kill us, we will be joyful. We will celebrate who we are and continue to be unapologetically Pacific Islander, unapologetically Asian American, unapologetically Asian. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for those deeply powerful words, Lisa. I would now like to invite Professor Ellen Wu, who is the director of the Asian American Studies Program and is also an associate professor in the Department of History at IU.
Thank you, Pallavi, and thank you everybody for coming. I just wanted to say that this past week has been a super compression of emotion for me. You know, it's been gut-wrenching sorrow, a lot of anxiety, fear for everybody who looks like me or looks foreign. But mostly I would say I feel rage. I wake up in a rage and I go to sleep in a rage. And I think that rage is really about value, which is what is the value of Asian women? Our lives and our labors and our bodies don't seem to be worth very much. I think social quantitative people consider us, you know, statistically insignificant. I think when society might think about what Asian women are good for, they might think of nurses or people who do your nails at salons, maybe nannies or housekeepers, spa workers, sex workers, TV anchors, maybe just a good punchline. We are undervalued and we are underrecognized. Asian women encounter and shoulder burdens of disparities everywhere, disparities of pay and respect, recognition, safety, and dignity. So I want to rewrite this question, and instead of asking, what are we good for, I hope that society might ask, what is good for us? What kind of care do we need? What kind of security do we need? Pleasure, joy, love, all of those things. When I think of, you know, when I'm just trying to work through that rage, what calms my rage is just thinking about Asian women as leaders. A good friend of mine, Dr. Melissa Borja in Michigan, she's been really emphasizing this point. And, you know, I just want to remind everybody, Asian women are leaders. They've been leaders before this moment. They are leaders right now during this moment. And they are going to continue to be leaders after this moment. And I hope that others will see this value and just recognize what we are worth. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your words, Professor Ryun. Next, we will hear from April Hennessy. April is the Monroe County Community School Corporation Board Trustee from District 2.
I just wanted to share these reflections of my own experiences sort of growing up and sort of part of the reason why I moved into my position as MCCSC School Board Trustee, in case it reflects any of your experiences as well. But, you know, when I was 4, my mother and I were on a walk through the neighborhood and we stopped to pick up some pecans that had fallen onto the sidewalk. I remember vividly to this day the look on the woman's face when she came out of her house to yell at us and she said, "Shoo, shoo," as if we were animals. She threatened to call the police if we didn't leave, and it was the first time I remember feeling the fear of our difference, though I couldn't fully comprehend at that moment what it meant. Later, of course, it was the wrinkled noses at my lunches, the fingers that pulled up eyes into slants, followed by gibberish that was meant to mimic any and all Asian languages. There are so many of those moments to choose from, but perhaps notably for me was the instance when a white police officer, who I knew, was observing a softball game that I was playing in. And when I was up to bat, he looked at me and he pulled up his eyes into severe slants and he said, "Come on, Ching Chong, show them what you've got." And then later in my high school yearbook, I was awarded the title, least likely to be famous for country music. That was the same year a boy told me that his mom didn't want him to date Oriental people. So, you know, we couldn't really date, but we could still mess around, he said. There was so much of that wanting and taking of my body across all the years of my life in more and less violent ways. But in my senior year, my mother, my Korean mother, was held up at gunpoint in one of the many dry cleaners that she owned with her Korean business partner. And over the past few days, I've thought back to that incident so many times. Unlike the shooting in Georgia, my mother's gunpoint encounter wasn't inherently anti-Asian, but the system and the culture that put my mother in that position certainly was. She didn't have the educational or social capital to navigate the judicial system in the heels of this event, nor did she possess the confidence to seek out the kind of employment that she really yearned to do. By that time, she'd spent 20 years in this country that had robbed her of her dignity one Ching Chong at a time, and had made her feel like her speech and her body and her presence were foreign and incomprehensible. At 40, I've begun to sort of unpack the lessons that I learned. I recognized that I was supposed to understand my hypervisibility, that problematic sexualizing of bodies like mine and like many of ours, as a gift. I should have felt lucky, in other words, that anyone wanted me or people like me, regardless of the form that that desire took. And on the other hand, you know, I was supposed to understand that the invisibility of my body in other situations was key to finding success. If you're quiet enough or obedient enough or small enough, then maybe you'll be lucky enough to make your way into rooms that are not really meant for people like us. My departure from the classroom here in the district and my subsequent decision to run for school board was rooted in this very thing. I was so tired of walking into my classroom every day, feeling afraid and invisible and ignored when I spoke up about the concerns for my own safety and the safety of my students of color. And I think this horrific shooting has really laid bare what many of us in the AAPI community have long known, that our belonging in this country has always been a fraught and tenuous pantomime. Our community, as varied and diverse as it is, but lumped together as if we're one, has only found this moment of visibility because of this violence that has been enacted by that rage again, that intersects at the site of racism and misogyny and xenophobia. My hope is that our collective outcry at this moment against anti-Asian hate, against anti-Blackness, and against all the forms of discrimination that white supremacy would have us use against one another will find power and sustained energy in this moment and beyond. For certainly, we are more than the caricatures and stereotypes that we have been instructed to neatly fold ourselves into. I stand with you tonight in grief and solidarity and a continued promise to take action to root out AAPI hate in all of the spaces that we occupy and those that we continue to be excluded from.
Thank you very, very much for sharing your story, April. I now invite Kelly Fan, who is currently the Social Advocacy Chair for the Asian American Association at IU. Kelly, in particular, has been in touch with students in AAA and has been able to hear about their thoughts on being AAPI at IU and how Atlanta has affected them.
I'm really grateful we could all be here together. We did a small mental health check-in with some of our members over Zoom. And something that really struck with them and that we've talked about today is how intertwined race and gender were in this situation. And it's been jarring to see how tropes, stereotypes, and false perceptions of AAPI women can lead to such unacceptable violence. A lot of students, as we were talking, were recognizing that there was not that much early education about Asian American history. And they felt that they were learning more history on social media from these past few weeks than they did before college. Others were reflecting on past microaggressions that they had experienced at IU and before. They were really conscious of how they interacted with those situations at that time versus how they were viewing them in hindsight after they learned more about Asian American history. So first, I want to say that something that we really appreciated as an organization was just how other organizations, such as like the African Student Association, had reached out to us to stand in solidarity. I really think that a lot of the undergraduate students are trying to be more connected and trying to reach out to each other whenever times happen. And I also want to take this moment just to recognize the importance of building communities and creating spaces for different communities at IU. As a student, I really think that being able to explore and become more educated in our different identities is something so important. Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for sharing those thoughts, Kelly. Finally, we hear from Huixin Tian, who is a graduate student in the Department of Information and Library Sciences. Huixin is also a member of the Indiana Grad Workers Coalition, and she will be reading a statement on behalf of the coalition tonight.
Thank you, Pallavi. I was born and raised in the mainland China. I came here 7 years ago as a foreigner. I'm an international student and employee here, but my presence is never ever foreign. I, like many other internationals in Bloomington, didn't come here to be a foreign object. I have a life and a bonding here, and my friends and my career here. Since the pandemic, many people like me have become the symbol of hate for our home countries, the countries many people never set their feet on, yet they managed to find a reason to hate us for. I'm here today is to voice out loud, we have internationals here, but we're not your objects. And I'm also here to deliver a statement on behalf of the Graduate Worker Coalition. The shooting of March 16 caused the death of 8 people. 6 of them were Asian American women. It has shown us how much anti-Asian hate, bigotry, and misogyny remain present in the current American society. Since 2019, a national trend of anti-Asian hate has been escalated under the previous administration. But in the far past, ugly stereotypes about Asian women and men, our looks, our languages, our food, our cultures, our lifestyles had been circulated in mainstream and social media. This very legacy with a long history in America will take many years to undo. As an international student and employee here, I want to point out that anti-Asian hate has affected the internationals from Asian countries. We are often treated as profitable targets for the university. We are charged unaffordable fees, while being ignored and underplaying the discrimination we face on campus spaces and in policies and procedures we are subjected to. We perform crucial labor for the university in our research and teaching, but we are not paid a living wage and not allowed to work outside the campus through our visa rules. I am part of the Indiana Graduate Workers Coalition. In the statement we issued last week, we condemned all forms of racial violence and hate crimes and stand firmly against anti-Asian hate. We are in solidarity of all individuals and organizations that are protesting to demand social justice for the Asian American community. We demand that IU take concrete steps to protect its Asian students, especially those who are in dire need of legal protection. Zhao Kaikai, a fellow graduate worker in the Department of Computer Science at IU, is a victim of the state-sponsored xenophobia. He has been charged with visa fraud and has been detained in federal custody since last July. During this very period, his wife gave birth to their first child, but she could hardly make a phone call to this baby's father across the Pacific Ocean. We have yet to see IU to release any statement or offer any support or help to Mr. Zhao and his family. This is why we ask IU to show us how much it values our presence on this very campus by making substantial change, by actively protecting us when our future and livelihood are at stake.
Hyojin was our last speaker, so I want to thank all of you once again for being here tonight. Especially want to thank all our speakers who said yes and turned up at very short notice. I also want to thank Anushka Sen, who was an absolute star in helping me organize speakers at short notice. Please remember who's not here with us today.